Welcome to Mad Lit Musings, a podcast with Jamie Jo Wright, where we go deeper and ask the tough and dangerous questions. Today's episode is sponsored by Revell and Bethany House Publishers, which are divisions of Baker Publishing Group. Find out more at bakerpublishinggroup.com. Hi, everyone. It is Jamie Jo right here at Mad Lit Musings podcast. And I have with us today Amanda Barrett, who is an exceptional author. And I always enjoy her books. She sets them during World War II time period. And it's just a blessing to have you here with us today.
Thank you so much, Jamie. It is such a joy to be here.
It's awesome. And this is not your first novel, but it is your first one with Revell Publishing. But you got several novels to your name. But tell us a little bit about The Warsaw Sisters that is releasing on November 7th.
So absolutely. So The Warsaw Sisters is the story of twin sisters, Antonina and Helena Dobrowska, and their individual journeys of resistance and resilience in occupied Poland. It explores events and heroes pulled from the pages of history, such as the Dairy Network of Women who rescued hundreds of Jewish children from the Warsaw Ghetto, and Poland's secret army that rose up in 1944 in a heroic and tragic battle to liberate their city. So in the midst of all this history, though, it's a story of sisterhood. It's a story about women forged by war in the enduring bond of sisterhood that abides even in the midst of the darkest of times.
That's awesome. And those are really, truly the dark times. And Poland was really kind of the center of a lot of the Holocaust and the world events when it came to World War II, wasn't it?
It was, and which is interesting because I think that Poland's, the narrative of the Polish resistance movement is not as well known as like the French resistance or maybe some of the other European countries, but yet there was so much resistance in the midst of so much loss. I mean, 3 million Polish Jews were murdered in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. I mean, that number is staggering, you know, compared to some of the other countries. And so there are so many stories within that country to be told.
Yeah, when you think about the loss of 3 million population, that is almost hard to fathom that type of impact on a nation as a whole, really. I mean, the economy, the relationships, community, et cetera, that had to be just completely devastating to the Polish communities.
It was. And there were also more than 2 million non-Jewish Polish citizens murdered in the Holocaust. The German occupation regime in Poland was very harsh. It was one of the most brutal. They would, if you hid a Jewish person in your home in like the Netherlands or something, you would maybe get sent to a concentration camp, which is bad. But in Poland, you would likely be executed and often sometimes even your whole family. So it was really a time that the Polish people, those who did choose resistance, they were doing so and taking extraordinary risks.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. So what made you focus on this portion of the World War II history, and what opened your eyes to the Polish resistance and all of that that inspired the story?
So it kind of came out of my last novel, Within These Walls of Sorrow, that was set in the Krakow ghetto. And while I was researching that novel, I came across all of these other incredible stories. Some I knew I had already known a little bit about, some I was learning for the first time. And the more I knew that I couldn't fit them into that previous novel, I just wanted to tell another story set in Poland. You know, the story of like the Home Army in Warsaw in 1944, when they rose up, it was this incredible battle for the city's freedom. They were trying to liberate it as the Soviets were advancing and the Germans were retreating, and they thought, this is our moment. And they fought for 63 days. And at the end, they were defeated by the overwhelming German forces. But in the midst of it, they were fighting, and there was around 40 to 50,000 Home Army soldiers, and nearly 12,000 of them were women. So it was these young women in their late teens and early 20s, and they were, you know, fighting as they were couriers, nurses, and combatants, and they were suffering and sacrificing as soldiers. And their stories were so compelling. And that's, I just really wanted to be able to illuminate those.
Oh, for sure. And you don't really hear a lot about women in combat in World War II. I mean, you do hear about different nations and the feminine and women movement as far as nursing, even in the United States, building warships and ammunition plants and those types of things. But actually, if I'm hearing you right, the Polish women were also doing combat. Correct.
Yes, they were. The majority of them were couriers and they were nurses. So the couriers were during the uprising, they were basically the communications link between different military units. So they were running through streets filled with rubble, carrying these messages. Sometimes they would send two messenger girls hoping that with the same message, hoping that one of them would get through because that was just the situation. But there were a few, especially as the uprising wore on and more soldiers were lost, that they would pick up a weapon from a fallen comrade and they would join the battle. And they would some of them were decorated with Poland's Cross of Valor and other military honors for their efforts. And it really was remarkable to think of women doing this.
Yeah, that's completely remarkable. It's just, I don't know. I think about where we are today, just in society, as how I grew up, and then I see how my children grow up, and how quickly, even though history isn't that far away when it comes to the war, how quickly it can fade in our memories, the sacrifices that were made so that we can live this almost carefree lifestyle that we live here, and I'm sure in the rest of Europe, they experience to a lot of a degree as well.
It is so important. I mean, I've been privileged to meet Holocaust survivors. I just met a World War II veteran this past summer who fought in the Battle of the Bulge. And I mean, in a few years, children won't be able to hear a Holocaust survivor or World War II veteran at the school, their stories, so it's really important to be preserving those stories. And I'm so admire people who, recorded interviews, who have written books based on, the stories, because it's just so important to keep these stories from fading from memory. So history is not only forgotten, but it's not also repeated.
Oh yeah, exactly. And I mean, just even look at what's going on in Israel right now and today with the insurgence that's taking place there. It's mind-boggling to me how throughout the centuries and all the way back into biblical times, the Jewish nation has always had such a target on their people. And in World War II, it was so evident.
Yes, it was. I mean, it was devastating. And I mean, I've heard in Israel, there are Holocaust survivors, experiencing the devastation that's going on there. And I mean, what to have lived through that all those years ago as a young, very young, as a teenager or a child, and now to be living through this again, it's just heartbreaking.
It is totally heartbreaking. Okay, so when you wrote the story about the twin sisters, what gave you the idea of twin sisters? Are they based off of actual women that you read about, or was it just something that popped into your mind?
So they're inspired by the women who rescued Jewish children. My character Antonina works with the Reina Sandler's network. Reina and her colleagues rescued hundreds. The network Reina was involved with rescued as many as 2,500 children. And then Helena is inspired by those women of the Polish resistance. But I decided to make them twins because, for kind of a weird reason, I wanted them to both be the kind of the same age when the war broke out, right
Okay.
around 18 years old. And so I just thought, well, let's make them twins. So they're, have grown up very close, but what's going to happen when this war comes in and their father goes off to war, their home is bombed, and they're having to face and basically growing from girlhood into womanhood in this ravaged world, and how are they going to respond?
Yeah, wow. And what a time to be coming into adulthood, really. I mean, it's kind of like a fast forward, like here, we're just gonna throw you in at the deep end and hopefully you can stay alive, not even just swim, but stay alive. And so do you have a lot of in the story, do you have a lot of saving of Jewish children, such as this kind of like a smuggling Jewish children type of a book, or is it more of an espionage? Like, tell us a little bit about that.
It delves into both. So
Okay.
Antonina has a Jewish, she says like a Jewish a man who she's in love with. He's a musician, and she's also a musician, and so they bond over that. And then his family gets sent to the ghetto, and so that really opens her eyes to what's going on with the Jewish people. At first, her interest is really mostly about helping him and helping his family, and so it's more of that almost like self-centered. But then, as her eyes are open, she sneaks into the ghetto to visit him, but she sees, the devastation unfolding there, and then as the deep deportations begin, where the Germans are daily deporting, thousands of Jewish men, women, and children to the Treblinka extermination camp. She has the opportunity to join a network of women who are not only smuggling the children out, but who are hiding them in their homes. And that's the role that she takes. She hides Jewish children in her home. I think, the story of Irina Sendler has become legendary, but there were so many unsung heroines who worked alongside her. And so through Antonina's character, I really wanted to eliminate those women and really ponder what would it have been like to smuggle a hide a Jewish child in your home, and this child who is traumatized traumatized, who's malnourished, you have to keep them quiet. Your neighbors, you know, might question if they, you know, see you buying extra food or hear something in your apartment that they shouldn't hear. And just those, what would that be like? And so I really love being able to kind of delve into all that through Antonina.
Wow. That's just, I mean, I guess I didn't even think about that, the concept of buying extra rations or supplies and the questions and the eyebrows that would lift. And you didn't necessarily have the protection of your neighbors either.
No, and honestly, Poland was very anti-Semitic. There was a very high anti-Semitism in Poland, even in the midst, though there were many who did resist, but you know, there was that anti-Semitism. So you were in danger of your neighbors turning you in, and maybe they turned you in because they were anti-Semitic, or maybe they turned you in because they were simply afraid. And they knew that if you got caught by the Gestapo, their whole building could come under suspicion. And so they were bound by that fear.
So some of it was also self-preservation by, you know, guilt by association potential.
Yes, right? Very much so.
Oh my goodness. Gosh, you know, I don't want to put myself in their shoes, but I think one of the things that's interesting reading books, and maybe it's a little easier when they're fictionalized because you're not necessarily toying with the stories of real life people, but you can try and put yourself into their experiences and their shoes and ask yourself those questions. What would I do? And, you know, how would I respond if I hear a baby crying through the walls of the next door apartment? And I'm like, there's no baby that's supposed to be living there. And how do you keep a child quiet? All those questions. Did they have like ways to do it?
They did. The Jewish children were very much schooled in that because of everything they'd gone through in the ghetto. So many of them were aged beyond their years, and they would huddle in the corner in absolute terror. But I mean, obviously a baby you couldn't. And so it was helpful with the baby. You had to almost make up a story. Like, I'm watching a friend's child or something like that, or I'm watching a cousin's child or something, because a baby couldn't be as easily concealed.
Yeah, not as easily concealed, but probably a little bit more difficult to prove their heritage at that point of infancy, maybe. I don't know. I'm already getting stressed out thinking about it. I shouldn't laugh, but I'm just like, oh my goodness, what these people went through to save lives and to keep their nations free from the Nazi regime. Wow.
And all the little daily choices that they had to do that. It wasn't just those heroic acts. It was the day-to-dayness of it. I think sometimes, you know, we think about these grand gestures, but really the heroism is can stay in the course day after day, quietly doing what you believe to be right.
Yeah. Baking bread and just baking an extra roll for the child that's hiding in the closet. Oh, wow. Okay. And so a lot of these Jewish children, their parents were already either arrested or taken or killed, unfortunately, probably, correct?
Yes, many of them were deported to Treblinka. So the women who would smuggle the children out of the ghetto, they would go into the ghetto and they would, you know, if it was a friend or if it was someone they knew, and they would basically say, you know, I can help your child live. I can't maybe get all of you up, but I can take care of your children. And so the mothers would place their children into the hands of these strangers, you know, trusting that this person would maybe be able to provide a chance at life. And there were many children, unfortunately, who weren't rescued because the parents just simply couldn't make the heartbreaking choice to give their child up. I mean, that was just, I mean, just think of that, the heart-wrenching choice, placing your child into the hands of a strange person, you know, trusting for their survival, wondering if you're ever going to see them again. And so many of these parents, by the end of the war, most of these children had lost one or both of their parents, which is just devastating.
Oh my goodness. And then how do you, you know, you think about it today and trying to find and reunite with your child, there's so many resources, but back then you didn't have the internet, you didn't have agencies and quick communication with an email here and an email there. And after the war, to try to even find your child and reunite with them, especially if you weren't even, because I know some of them, they didn't even use real names. So they may not have even had the real name of the person that was taking care of their child, right?
A lot of the children would be given the Catholic names and Catholic birth certificates, because they had to have that to survive. A lot of the children were placed in, or they would go to what they were called emergency care units, which is sort of what my character Antonina runs in her home. And then they would be placed to a more permanent, which would be like an orphanage or a convent or a school or something like that. And that's where they would remain throughout the duration of the war. And so, how would you find your child like that? Mm-hmm. I mean, some parents were able to reunite with their children. Irena Sandler did seek to make those reunifications happen, but there were many children who often just grew up probably never knowing, you know, their real story because they were too young.
Oh, that's crazy. So in Poland, was Poland primarily Catholic if they weren't of the Jewish faith?
Yes,
Okay.
Poland was very primarily Catholic.
Okay. And so did the Nazis have any respect at all to like the nunneries and the places like that that were taking care of children, or was that just kind of a free for all and the Nazis went wherever they went?
They did to a degree. They did to a
Okay.
degree, but there were certainly instances of them searching those convents. And I mean, the courage of these nuns, to hide multiple children. And it often wasn't just risking the nuns, it was risking the Polish Catholic children who were staying also. And so it was, do we, all these other children who would be at risk if we take in these Jewish children, and what do we do? And so many of them did choose to accept and to hide and to shelter these Jewish children, and really just relying on the Lord in the midst of that.
Yeah, abs oh wow. This is just great. So what do you think would be the most important pieces for your readers to take and glean from when they read this book?
I love the stories of courage birthed by adversity, and I love the stories of ordinary people choosing to not remain silently complicit, choosing to act even in the midst of these impossible choices. And I think that there are so many, as I researched and discovered these stories, I was so inspired, and it made me ask, what would I have done? And then also, what can I be doing today? And so I really hope readers are left with, the inspiration that all of us can be a small light in the midst of the darkness. And I think that there are today, in the midst of a broken world, there are so many ways that we can be a force for good. We can, with the Lord's help, make a difference. And so studying the stories that took place 80 years ago just still seems so deeply relevant today. And then another thing that I would say is that when we tell these stories about the Second World War and the midst of this, it really is, God, in even in the midst of suffering, God is good. I love one of the lines in my book that says, "The mark of his presence is not in the absence of pain." And I think that so often today we think that God's favor means our life is going to be problem-free, but so often it is in those moments of deepest heartbreak, deepest brokenness, when we are closest to him and when he draws us to himself. And so I think that that is, can be really be beautifully illustrated in the stories, of the heartbreak of the war.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh my gosh. Well, we could talk forever about World War II and all the impacts. It was such a global, well, obviously World War, but such a global story, and there's all these little nuances that you just don't hear about. So I love that you're bringing out the story of Poland and the women that were so pivotal in the lives of not just the Jewish children, but in their Polish nation as well. So that's awesome. Where do readers go to get this book to find out more about you? Because you do have other books that visit a lot of these themes too. So
So I always invite readers to visit my website, amandabarrett.net, and I always invite them to sign up for my newsletter, where I share sneak peeks, exclusive cover reveals, all sorts of fun stuff, giveaways. And then the book can be found on where all major online retailers. And then also, I love hanging out on Facebook and Instagram, so I invite anyone who enjoys being on those platforms to connect with me there.
absolutely. And from what I understand, this podcast is probably airing on your release date. So they can still order the book from Baker Bookhouse and get 30% off and free shipping, if I'm understanding that correctly. So that's also a bonus.
Absolutely. Love Baker Bookhouse.
Yes, Baker Bookhouse is great. So I always like to try and give them a little bit of a plug. And they treat their customers phenomenally. Like it's a hand-wrapped book. You're not just getting the book stuffed in an envelope and shipped to you.
Like a little care package.
It is. I feel like every time I get one from Baker Bookhouse, I feel like I'm opening a birthday present because it's wrapped in cardboard and then wrapped in brown paper, and it's just so special. So awesome. Well, Amanda, I'm excited for this book to come out, and I'm excited for people to be aware of the stories. And thank you for keeping this history alive. It's so important to our faith today and to the legacies left by the people that sacrificed so much.
Well, thank you. This has been such a joy.
Thank you for listening to Mad Lit Musings. You can find out more information about Mad Lit and all that it has to offer at madlitmentoring.com. That's madlitmentoring.com. Or check out more about Jamie Jo Wright at jamiewrightbooks.com.